And what's odd is when they look at people that suffer from autotoxic chemical-induced hearing loss, it could be in one ear or the other or both, and there's really no rhyme or reason as to how it attacks the auditory nerve.
This is Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, hosted by award-winning journalist Scott Orr. Now, here's Scott.
That's right, and I will not let Parkinson stop me. Thank you for joining me today for another edition of Code 3. This is the show that gives you all the information on a firefighting topic you need in about 20 minutes. Now let's get started. Are you ready for this? There's a whole class of hazardous chemicals that can damage your hearing, and they're byproducts of your average structure fire. Yep, that's right. When you burn home furnishings these days, you don't just get carcinogens, you get autotoxic chemicals. Now, the PPE you wear routinely for firefighting protects against this. But just like the stuff in smoke that causes cancer, autotoxic chemicals are a threat when you least expect them, during overhaul and even standing outside a burning structure. And when you combine exposure to autotoxins with screaming sirens and your basic fireground noise, well, it's no surprise that firefighters are often retiring with substantial hearing loss. And they may not even know why. Here to tell you what you need to know about this is Brian Dable. He's chief of the Mine Hill Fire Department in New Jersey. That's a volunteer department, and Brian's paid job is in occupational safety strategy and program development. He's also the owner of BGD Safety and Compliance, LLC, which serves industry and fire departments. So he's very familiar with this topic. And Brian Dable joins me now. Welcome to Code 3.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to have you. So this whole concept is new to me. You're telling me that there are chemicals present during overhaul and in smoke from a fire that cause hearing loss?
Correct. So a lot of smoke contains things such as carbon monoxide, hydrogen cyanide, which are known to damage the auditory nerve. And that then increases damage from hazardous levels of noise. And then, you know, there's various other items that can be in smoke that can do the same.
Now, how much of a risk is this as compared to, say, the idea that there's carcinogens in smoke?
So I would say it's about equal risk. All smoke is going to have these chemicals in it. So essentially, when you're absorbing it through your skin or inhaling it, it's going into your bloodstream, and then it gets to your auditory nerve, which causes the degradation. And then in combination with the hazardous noise, that's what causes the damage.
But it's not something that directly affects the ear.
So the two main routes of exposure for these chemicals would be absorption through your skin from, you know, contaminated PPE or compromised PPE. And then the other method would be inhalation. You know, the guys that are doing overhaul without an SCBA, you know, getting hit with smoke outside the structure, standing, you know, right outside it, or not a proper fit on their respirator, things of that nature.
So this is just like carcinogens in that we need to wear PPE when we're doing overhaul and even just standing outside of a fire if we're downwind from it.
Correct. And, you know, there's different gas monitoring that can be done for carbon monoxide, hydrogen cyanide to show, you know, that if you're in a safe level. For example, carbon monoxide, if you're below 35 ppm, you know, there's no respiratory protection recommended. Not sure what the exact number for hydrogen cyanide is, but, you know, that you can get meters that will tell you if you're in a safe area or not, whether or not you need to be using that PPE.
Now, normal monitoring gear that's carried on board a rig doesn't check for these autotoxic chemicals. Is there such a thing as gear designed for portable use for this?
There is a common meter on all the trucks, normally known as a four gas meter, that will monitor for carbon monoxide in addition to oxygen, LEL, and hydrogen sulfide. However, they don't monitor for hydrogen cyanide. That is a separate meter that is, you know, a couple $1,000 investment that not a lot of departments carry. And interestingly, you know, in South Florida a couple years ago, they conducted a study. 214 firefighters, they did audiograms on them, which is like a hearing test. And then 30% of them out of that 214 ended up showing a mild to profound hearing loss about halfway into their career. Other studies have shown over 50% of firefighters after leaving a career in the fire service end up with some sort of significant hearing loss. It's not really tied to either hazardous noise or autotoxic chemicals or both. There's no way to delineate, but you know, the studies are starting to show that it's a combination of both.
Well, I think it's typical that people who retire with hearing loss say, well, yeah, I sat in the rig with that screaming siren for 20 years, so I'm not surprised that I don't have good hearing anymore.
Well, and one of the things that happens is, so you really lose your hearing in three ways. People experience what's called tinnitus, which is like a ringing in the ears. Then there's a, you know, full hearing loss where people actually have a lack of hearing. And then there's people experience balance loss. And then interestingly, some of the studies are showing that the hearing loss and the balance loss tends to lead to a higher risk of cognitive decline in retirement. So it actually can have some bigger implications other than just hearing loss.
Are you saying that this may not be just a hearing problem, but that it can affect your cognitive ability? Is that what you mean?
Correct. And then I was just reading the other day, there was a study on how your body reacts to high noise. So moving away from the autotoxic chemicals, when you're exposed to a lot of loud noise, your body goes into that fight or flight mode. So there's certain things that occur. Your blood pressure increases. Your cortisol, which is a stress hormone release, increases. Blood flow to non-critical organs slows down. Your heart rate and your breathing increase to try to get oxygen to your brain. Your peripheral vision increases. Your eyes dilate to allow more light in. So, you know, when you're exposed to noise, your body tends to change and function in a different manner.
So why isn't the existence of these chemicals better known?
I would say it's because OSHA doesn't really regulate autotoxic chemicals when it comes to hearing loss. So they have certain decibel levels you can be exposed to. So to be exact, it's 85 decibels over an 8-hour period. And after that, you have to be enrolled in a hearing conservation program. You have to have annual audio testing, and a loss of hearing beyond a certain level becomes a recordable injury. When you're exposed to autotoxic chemicals, there's no requirement for an audiogram every year or a hearing conservation program. That doesn't mean that a fire department that's serious about their safety and health program can't do that. That is a way that you can track hearing loss. It's just not required, which is why a lot of people don't do it.
It's a case of the government not mandating a problem be solved, so therefore some people don't even know there is a problem.
Correct. Yes. And I mean, it's really, that the things you can do to eliminate the risk or reduce the risk are pretty simple. It's just a matter of using your PPE, using a respirator when you're working in a smoky area, doing some air monitoring to determine if you need the PPE, proper cleaning of your PPE after a fire, showering right away, the same stuff we talk about doing to prevent cancer in the fire service.
Right, but no one's really talking about this as one of the hazards that firefighters face on a daily basis.
Yeah, correct. I mean, there's something called the hierarchy of controls in the safety world, and that's actually what I do full-time, is I do occupational safety and health for manufacturing. The first step in the hierarchy of controls is eliminate the hazard, and obviously fire department going to a fire can't eliminate their exposure to smoke. So then we move on to There's administrative controls and all sorts of stuff that goes down. And the last step of that hierarchy of controls is PPE. And essentially, that's what we're relying on as a fire department. We can't do anything other than wear the right PPE and then, you know, conduct that gross decon afterwards and make sure that we're eliminating as much of the hazard as possible.
So we have to treat this as a carcinogen, essentially, and something that collects on turnout gear.
Correct. So, for example, these chemicals, really, they're the same ones that cause, you know, cancer and the hearing loss, so that you'll absorb it through your skin, for example. It gets into your bloodstream, and from there, it goes multiple places. Some cause cancer. Sometimes it goes to your auditory nerve, which is how we have the hearing loss occur. And what's odd is when they look at people that suffer from autotoxic chemical-induced hearing loss, it could be in one ear or the other or both, and there's really no rhyme or reason as to how it attacks the auditory nerve.
I'll be back with more right after this.
You can't fight what you can't see. Hypersight is an affordable vehicle-mounted thermal imager that sees through smoke and cuts through the chaos. Hypersight works in the same harsh environments you do. Hypersight sees through smoke to show the seat of the fire for a more targeted, effective attack. Hypersight enables you to make immediate decisions that can make all the difference. Go to hyper-sight.com to learn more. That's hyper-sight.com. See through smoke with Hypersight by RPX Technologies.
You work for a volunteer department. Is it getting harder to find volunteers the more we talk about these kind of things, like the risks of cancer, the risks of autotoxic loss?
So I would say as more of this information becomes public, yes, it is a deterrent. You know, a lot of people aren't willing to risk their life or their health. The environment is changing. You know, not as many people are jumping to volunteer at the fire department anymore. People are working multiple jobs to afford, you know, a basic home in this economy. And, you know, these things just exacerbate the issue. And what I will say off subject for what we're talking about, OSHA actually has proposed some significant new legislation aimed at fire departments. They're actually taking the 1910.156 standard for fire brigades and completely redoing it, called emergency response. And the level of things that fire departments are going to be required to do is going to be extremely cumbersome for especially volunteer departments to manage and handle. It's actually so significant. I'm putting together a class for our local fire departments to be able to educate them on it, because in the next 18 months, we're going to have a lot of legislation coming out requiring a ton of extra training and planning.
Wow. That's going to be much easier for career departments to deal with. Will your average volunteer department be able to handle that?
It's going to depend on, you know, the kind of resources that each department has. You know, lucky for my department, I do this for a living. So, you know, I've been working on it, knowing what's coming, and we'll be fine. But there's other departments that just don't even have the knowledge or the know-how of where to begin with some of these requirements. Funny enough, out of all these requirements, there's nothing in there about autotoxic chemicals still. And these new OSHA regulations are going to heavily reference the NFPA standards, essentially incorporating them into law by reference. So, you know, you're not just at this point trying to comply with OSHA. You're complying with these massive amount of NFPA standards that not only is it a labor and time and manpower issue for volunteer departments, but it's a money issue when they regulate what kind of equipment you have to have and how often it has to be replaced.
Do you run into a situation where you tell the people what's involved with being a firefighter and they decide that it's too much of a risk to do the job for free, that they just can't do that?
So typically, I'll speak for my firehouse. You know, we're volunteer, and currently I'm serving as chief, and I in the past did 4 other years as chief. So when somebody comes in, one of the first things we review with them is kind of our expectations in the department for attendance, you know, drills, meetings, calls, and the length of investment of time for the initial firefighter certification. And at that point, people either say, yes, I'm going to do this, or they turn away right away when they hear that it's over 200 hours of training to be able to step foot in a truck. And then, you know, it just continues from there. So when you add all these other OSHA requirements in that are coming, it just makes it worse. But yeah, I'm finding at this point, we're a town of about 3 square miles. We do, you know, maybe a little over 100 calls a year. We have some pretty busy mutual aid around us, and we're spending more time on training and safety compliance than we are on running calls. And we maybe add one firefighter a year, and we lose one a year. So it ends up being a wash a lot of the time. We're not making any progress with volume.
You sound a little discouraged.
Yeah, it is discouraging. And, you know, I feel there's a lot of things specifically, I'm in New Jersey, that the state could potentially do to even some of the municipalities in the form of tax abatements or water and sewer fee reductions that, you know, would incentivize residents to join. We have a very unique situation where we're a very specific type of community. We have a lot of small bedroom homes. The average mortgage being $2,500 a month right now for a smaller home, kids can't afford to stay in the town. So if we do get younger people to join, they have to move out of town. There's no apartments. So, you know, we have to try to incentivize that middle-aged family to join a fire department.
Yeah, it's an ongoing problem. So now we've got auto toxins to worry about as well. And hopefully there will be more attention paid to this so that people will understand that hearing loss is not something that they just have to accept from firefighting.
I think you're going to see a lot more coming in the way of firefighter safety in the next couple of years, not only because of the OSHA regulations coming out, but I see a lot more people talking about cancer and the hazards of smoke. And, you know, this is something that's going to come into play alongside that.
Well, we'll be looking for it. Ryan Dable, thanks for talking with me today on Code 3.
Yep, no problem. Thank you for having me.
And you'll find more about autotoxic chemicals, including links to what OSHA regulations do exist, on our website at code3podcast.com/hearing. If your hearing is important to you, it's worthwhile reading, so take a look. Now, if this show taught you something new about autotoxic chemicals and hearing loss, please tell another firefighter about this episode. If you're learning about this topic for the first time, odds are you know someone else who's never been told about this hazard either. That's who needs to listen to this podcast. So spread the word. All right, that's it. That's all for this edition of Code 3. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next time with more, and I hope you'll join me. I'm Scott Orr, and until then, stay safe.
To contact us, get more information on today's show, or to subscribe to the podcast, go to code3podcast.com.